new, organizationdesignforum.org. We're a community of practitioners. We offer connection, knowledge, practice. We got a full range of experience and application among us. Some people have accountability for occasional projects. Other people are academics. Others are specialists. We do offer an annual conference, which for obvious reasons was delivered virtually this year and quite possibly 2021 as well, looking into that. And the other options to join us in addition to the conference, we have a monthly global conversation, which is a joint project between ODF and our sister organization, European ODF. And we talk about hot topics and trends in organization design. It's based on curated content, 5 or so articles, and posted in a newsletter about 10 days ahead of the call. That's the last Wednesday of every month. We also organize what you're about to join, which is a community conversation open to anyone to join as well as lead. And we're happy to have Harris as our guest here today. For information about the upcoming conversations, or if you'd like to lead one, you can visit our website. And again, that's organizationdesignforum.org. So the intention here is for everyone to participate. So you can simply chime in as you like, or you can use chat, and I'll be monitoring that through the conversation and chiming in on your behalf. We understand not everyone's in a place where they can optimally talk, so we're happy to work that way as well. We want to be casual. However, we do want you to have some view of how you're investing your time. So we have a topic and a few discussion points. The topic today is productivity. There are obvious organizational productivity questions, which have been in flux for a while now. You might have heard of a term called the productivity paradox, which is investments in technology that are not yielding corresponding improvements in productivity, at least how we traditionally measure it. There's also the individual level. To be blunt, our work from home people slacking, you know, different views of what productivity is and attendance and those sort of things. So that's our topic for today. We have a few discussion points, like we said, that'll be popped up on the screen while we're talking if you have to check in and out so you can figure out how to get back in and into the conversation. Our moderator today is a member of our community. We're delighted to have Harris Ahmed. He is the founder and CEO of Pragmatium Consulting Group, which he founded in 2009. And that is a boutique management consulting firm. And they advise companies on strategy, transformation, organizational change, and leadership challenges. And prior to that, he was with Oliver Wyman, Aon Hewitt, PricewaterhouseCoopers. He has worked with a large number of the Fortune 100 companies here in the U.S., as well as cities and government organizations over the last 25 years. So he'll be taking us through this conversation. And as I said, anyone chime in and pop in as you like. So thank you, Harris.
Thank you so much, Gina, for that kind introduction and for helping me and coaching me for this pop-up conversation. And thank you, as always, to Tania, who just does a fantastic job coordinating on behalf of the ODF. So good morning and happy Tuesday to you all. The topic, as Gina mentioned, the genesis of this was frankly some questions that I've been getting from our clients as they approach the 6-month point of work from home, struggling with some aspects of managing work. This is coming from senior leadership, some middle management, and some, you know, fatigue from rank and file employees. So what we thought is we'd just open this up to fellow practitioners and get some input from you all. This is not about talking about sort of the facilities aspect and, you know, where work gets done, but more particularly on work itself, the value. How are we beginning to shift the way we think about work, the way work gets done? And if I may, are we sort of having a existential question about what work is? So let me just start with that sort of stream of thinking, and would love to get a fellow practitioner's view on is work, is the value of work, the way we define work, how work gets done, has that shifted? Or is this really more of a transient state till most large employers at least go back to the way work was? Go ahead. Who wants to kick us off? I know it's not a shy bunch. If you're on mute, unmute yourself, please.
So I'll chime in. It's Susanna. I think we are in the middle of something. I'm not sure it is a full shift. So I think we're in the middle of a physical location shift, mm-hmm. or I would say an openness to a physical location shift that wasn't maybe as much so there 6 months ago. So there's more of an openness to people working from a different location. I'm not sure how we're managing work has radically changed. I think, again, there's more of an openness. I'll use an example. I know in my own organization, every organization I've ever worked for, that it was very clear you did not have children in the room. You had an enclosed space. You were very professional. You dressed as though you were going to be in the office. And this was just a replacement of the office, and all other conditions must remain the same. Now, kids are popping in and out. There's much more of an appreciation that people's lives have become intermingled with their work. There is greater tolerance for sitting at your kitchen table, not having a defined space within your home, and having to take off for an hour or two in the middle of the day because you've got some sort of responsibility that you can't shift because you don't have the same support network that you used to have. So there is more of an openness to some fluidity. Is that a wholesale shift? Jury's out. And as we start, a year from now, if we were having this conversation, would there still be that same level of openness when the world is maybe a little bit more normal?
That's fair. So you think we're sort of in the midst of it. You're not that sure about the permanence of some of the shifts of how work gets done and where it gets.
Okay. But I think it'll be different from where we started. So I always kind of describe it as a pendulum. We were over here on the pendulum. The pendulum has swung full overly to the other side. And where it lands and where it kind of normalizes to is probably not going to be at either end of that.
Got it. Makes sense. How about others? Other viewpoints?
I'll chime in here. Hi, it's Mariah. Sorry, I'm having some camera issues, but to echo the previous comments, I agree there is a shift. And with that shift, I think we're seeing some organizations start to make some pretty permanent calls, like, oh, we're going to work remote. Like, you never have to come back to the office, or we're going to be working remote for this amount of time. And I think that's an interesting trend because we really don't know mm-hmm. What this shift is going to look like, what the permanence of some of these shifts are going to look like. So it's been interesting to see some companies and organizations just make these really firm calls when we don't know yet. And I wonder what it will look like if some of those decisions that are made end up not being the best fit for those organizations a year from now or 2 years from now. So I feel like I'm someone that's more cautious and just wanting to stay patient with how things continue to evolve instead of thinking about needing to make any firm plans in the future.
Makes sense. Yeah. And, you know, you've got some employers in some industries, high tech in particular, some of their work had been more remote and more distant, I guess, compared to some other industries who have made the call. My daughter, 23-year-old, just started her career. She works for Google. And Gina knows she was operating out of Austin, and now she's working out of the bedroom in which she grew up back home in Chicago. And, you know, they've decided that, you know, for all intents and purposes, they may retain work from home permanently. Now, she's not that sure about it, and that's another topic that we'll delve into after this about what that says about sort of employee motivation and loyalty to the employer. But I want to stay on this topic. Other viewpoints in terms of the shifting nature of work and how work gets managed?
If I could chime in, you know,
yes, please.
We're working with a number of clients right now that I think 4 months ago was sort of, you know, wait and see. I think as the reality sets in that this is going to be with us for at least another year or two,
right.
And that this is, you know, not something that's going to be a quick fix to get, you know, to go back to whatever the old normal was, assuming that the old normal was even worth going back to. You know, we're beginning to work with clients across a range of industries that want us to think about, you know, how do we redefine what work is, which is what you sort of raised at the beginning of the conversation, and how does the physical workplace relate to that? And I think that, you know, it's, you know, we're working with one large healthcare provider, a hospital, City of Hope, in Orange County, you know, California, where we're thinking about, you know, 4,000 employees, you know, how many of them can work virtually? What's the impact on the workplace as a result of that? We're doing work with, you know, with you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield in Arizona, you know, where when we started working with them pre-COVID, there was no conversation around working from home. You know, now the conversation is what would happen if we keep 60% of our staff working from home, and who should that 60% be? And then what's the impact on the physical workplace? Do we reduce our real estate as a result of that? I mean, so, you know, I think that, you know, one of the things that's always fascinated me, you know, was this relationship between, you know, the design of the organization and the physical, or, you know, design of the workplace that relates to that. And I think that's being turned upside down completely, which is really driving a lot of the conversation we're having with a lot of clients. And then you've got the, you know, the technology clients that are just, you know, outright coming out and saying, we're not going back to work at least for another 2 years.
Right. True.
What are our assumptions around what the value of work actually are? And again, I'm bringing this out of the chat. Thank you, Dwayne. Our assumptions around what the current value of work are. What do we think we're assuming?
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Jenna, for calling that out. Yeah, you know, and thinking about what James just wrote, I mean, when COVID started, there was a lot of talk about essential workers. And so these are people who worked in the grocery store, who were the frontline workers, and their work was considered essential and of high value, but their pay, their benefits did not reflect that. And so, you know, for me personally, I can't speak to anybody else, but, you know, I actually thought, my job is not essential, but I get to sit at home and work and continue getting paid. But really, if they got rid of an org designer, maybe the org wouldn't work as great, but it'll still function. So to me, it started me questioning, you know, how societally, like how we value these different jobs, and you know, the tech folk are very privileged in that way. And so I don't know what the current value of work is, but I'm curious how others are thinking about it.
No, that's a fundamental question. And I think, you know, inherent there is also, how do we measure work? The traditional measures of work as in, you know, FaceTime and being in meetings and yes, getting your work done is a bit different when you've got a distant workforce. So interested in you all chiming in about the value of work and also how we measure work in this new normal.
If I may, I'd suggest that the value of work depends. I mean, it's subjective, and I think it's always been subjective. These are good points raised about frontline workers and what is essential, but you know, everybody thinks their own work is essential, that's fair. And there was a point here where you know, getting your hair cut was probably the most essential thing anybody wanted, and you wouldn't have said that a year ago. You know, you would have thought a haircut's a haircut, right? So I think in every context, the value of work probably differs. It's just, and that's just something to recognize or acknowledge. It's not a static thing.
Fair. Good point. Others?
And I maybe chip in and add to that. Hello, everybody. It's Janet from Johannesburg, South Africa. My context in many ways is very similar, but of course, one of the issues that we have, which is really very much in our faces at the moment, is racial issues and racial divides. And I'm on a group, I was invited into a group called the Black Forum. And somebody posted on that group the other day, a picture of a laborer and commented, and you know, there's some very strong feelings on this group, but commented on the fact that many, in our context, many, you know, white people will say, I really worked hard to get what I've got. It's the whole question of privilege and all of that kind of thing. And it got me thinking, and I think one of the challenges is that we value on economic terms, and we value based on demand, and we value work based on supply. And certainly in our context, you know, my skills are rarer and therefore valued more highly than, you know, a guy who works in my garden, for example. A book that's really interesting, I don't know how many people have ever come across, called The Differentiated Workforce. And it really does talk about how we identify those critical workers within an organization. And so often we don't necessarily value technical skill and reward technical skill, expect people to have to move into some leadership role in order to be valued more highly. So there's just a couple of thoughts.
No, great points. And certainly, maybe we're in the midst of sort of just fundamentally thinking about and defining how we value this historically and how we will now and in the future. Let's pivot to productivity a bit. Gina mentioned that at the front end. There's this paradox that is put out there that despite advancements in technology, really sort of at least in the developed world, the productivity as such has not gone up for economies and or by definition, large corporations. But it's in this environment, a lot of people feel that, you know, the chit-chat's gone and they're sort of focused on doing work and the commute's gone for some, and they're giving that back into the employer. So has, in your opinion, has employee productivity gone up?
This is Wesley. Hi, guys. I am also cameraless this morning. I'm an in-house consultant. I work for a public utility. And we are having interesting issues with a lot of these topics. We have always been, obviously, it's a very engineering-focused workforce. There's a huge divide between our field workforce. And so when you talk about productivity, in many ways, none of that has changed. You know, we're still sending trucks out and people are still climbing poles and we're still making power. In terms of our in-house workforce, though, one of the things that I do want to kind of toss into the conversation is that we're finding that there's a factor in here right now, because working from home was not people's choice. Mm-hmm. So it sets up a different dynamic than if I have, you know, applied to a job knowing that I was going to have a remote office, or set up my consulting firm knowing that I was going to have a remote office. And so we're kind of trying to figure out our way through that, even just that people's emotional response. And that then affects productivity, right? So from a neuroscience perspective, if I don't feel that I have a choice in something, then everything that I encounter that is different is going to feel like a reinforcer, right, of that mindset. And so it's not just as clean as when I used to work in software and we all work from home, and the system was already ready for that, and that was my choice for the most part going into it. So I just kind of wanted to toss that into the conversation as well.
No, that's a great add-in, because, you know, it's been sort of forced. And back to my daughter, she's not that sure about this. I mean, she's at the start of her career. Networking was important. It'll be interesting what the economist calls that we'll emerge to this idea of an optional office. Once that happens, how people sort of opt in or opt out into that environment may have, you know, something to do with them making a decision. And it may assume that, you know, those who choose to do this may have higher sort of intrinsic motivation with having made that choice, but interested in others on that. And James made a very good point that in this new world, the way traditional performance evaluation has been done may shift, may permanently shift, or may have to shift, to factor in how work gets done and how we measure work.
Yeah, that is huge for us as well.
Other viewpoints, those who have not spoken, there's 16 folks on the call. If you are able to, we would love to hear from you. So chime in, please.
I would add, before they go on with the traditional performance, someone mentioned earlier around leadership in what you look at. I mean, maybe you're still evaluating in the same way. You're just evaluating how well you connect remotely versus previously you'd evaluate how well you function in a different environment. It might be something like that. It might be a whole scale change, but it might just be that shifting of context is a possibility as well.
Hi everyone, this is Lisa and Nick. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Lisa. Go ahead, please.
Okay. So I work for a grocery store. So it's interesting. We are part of that essential workforce, but I personally am in the corporate office. So for our grocery employees, you know, nothing's really changed. They don't have an option to work from home. So productivity there has obviously been very much increased, and our corporate workforce has really shifted to do whatever we need to do to support those store employees. For a while, we were even, so myself and an org design team, there wasn't org design work to be done. All of our projects were halted, and we were kind of deployed to other areas of the company. So I was recruiting for a while, doing some phone screens for stores in the New Jersey store, in the New Jersey state, where I'm in New York. And so it's been interesting to see productivity for us now, since things have kind of geared up a little bit more, has really increased, I think, in my team. We don't have to drive between buildings to get to meetings. Meetings start on time and end on time. So productivity for us has been definitely higher from our end. I think there still might be some small pockets of our corporate areas that are struggling to find value-added work, but we're working through those and really measuring that. Our leaders are really responsible to make sure that they're engaging with their teams and making sure they're meeting deadlines. And but the other really nice thing that I wanted to point out was, you know, the typical 8-to-5 work day has really kind of been lightened a little bit. So I am working from home and I have 2 children, and whether I get my work done between 8 and 5 or between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m., my boss really doesn't care, as long as my deadlines are met and, you know, I'm getting my work done when it makes sense for me. So I'm interesting to know too from other companies how that kind of like typical 8 to 5 daytime has shifted as well.
So Lisa, you made a good point about productivity being up. How do you feel about engagement levels at your company at the grocery industry? Has engagement gone up, at least for the corporate folks or frontline, if you have a view?
Yeah, I would say yes. It's going to be a struggle for us because our culture, we're a people company. So obviously our store engagement has been very, very great. You know, our employees feel that they were taken care of and they were kept safe through the pandemic. We implemented lots of extra safety precautions, and we've heard that from our customers and our people, that they have been really proud to work and continue working. So I feel like the engagement is level is very high for our store employees. For our corporate folks, we implemented, our senior vice president of HR has monthly staying connected meetings to make sure that he's staying in touch with all of the corporate folks. So I feel the engagement has been intact that way. However, you know, that for going back to that first question, are we beginning to shift? I do think that obviously right now there's a huge shift, but we're tossing around the idea of permanent, you know, work from home options, maybe a couple days a week. But because our culture is so people focused, we do at some point want to get as many folks as possible back to the office in a safe way. So we do think we'll shift back to kind of the old ways, but with some blended, scenarios for some folks that can continue to work from home. But yeah, I would say engagement is more just, that might just be our culture, or it could be just, you know, everybody pulling together, and that's kind of what we had to do. And it just speaks to kind of our values as a company.
Interesting.
I can second what Lisa said, working in healthcare, everybody has been, the productivity has been higher because your decisions are faster. I mean, people aren't having side meetings at the airport and walking in and out of rooms, and, you know, it's that kind of thing. So we've had higher productivity. We also have higher working hours, but it hasn't been clear if that's just because people are taking time out during the day, or if they really want to work more, you know, all that's not clear, and engagement has been higher as well. I wanted to kind of ask the other side of the question that Lisa didn't mention. Is anyone seeing where people think that they're slacking? Because we have not had that. We truly haven't had anybody get upset about people not being available or not being around or thinking they're not pulling their weight, but it might just be a different environment. So I wondered if you had any of that, Lisa, or if anybody else had anything where they thought it just kind of wasn't fair or on some dimension.
May I say something to this point? Hi, I'm Hubert. I'm zooming in from Vienna, Austria. It's evening here. Quite nice to see you in the morning there. I see some slack, but it's not intentional slack. It's a slack because of what you mentioned, Jean, before. It's the technical paradox, because many people from the, let's say, public administration are forced now to go into home offices. But what's happening there is that they do not have the computer equipment. Or if they have their computer equipment, they are not allowed to use, for instance, Zoom as a network, as a communication tool, because of some, law things, data law things, which are going on here in Europe. So people are struggling with technology, and it's not a personal slack, but they are not, anyhow, they are not performing very well, and the productivity is low. Another paradox I would like to add, which to our discussion for the productivity paradox, is something that I can see in many organizations I'm working with as a consultant, is people are motivated and they're engaging much more, not because they're happy to engage into remote work, but they see that many companies now are failing. They are going bankrupt. They are going out of business. Yeah. So a huge number of people fear that if they don't really work hard now at the moment, the productivity of the company fails and they would lose their jobs. Yeah. So this is some external motivator, which is also running productivity at the moment. And therefore it's not so easy to measure it mm-hmm. as a result of the remote work situation or managing distant work situation, but rather let's say a contextual issue of the economy as it evolves now under the COVID conditions.
No, that's a wonderful point, Hubert, and thank you for joining from one of my favorite cities, Wien.
Hopefully you come soon again.
I hope so. I'm missing
Vienna. Family. Vienna has only 5% of the normal tourists, what we're used to have here.
Thank you. No, so I mean, you're making a very good point about the fact that, you know, there may have been some forced productivity gains. People were fearful about losing jobs. Yeah. That fear may have driven them to be more, at their best behavior. And there's some initial feedback and some surveys that I'm seeing that some of that stuff may be waning now that we're into 6 months and we may be doing this for a long time. But interested in other viewpoints on this issue of fairness, because it's been coming up that, some people are carrying their weight and doing their jobs and others not. Are you guys seeing that? And if so, what could leaders do to manage distant work and distant teams in a more fair way?
I can start at one thing we've been having success with is coaching leaders on like promoting people, promoting their work, you know, being active, because previously you'd be unconscious about it because you would think people were talking and moving around and doing it yourself and having opportunities. And so we've had some success and just highlight what they're doing to other leaders and to take that actual action. So that's been one thing that's seemingly small, but it has is really helped with engagement. And you're a really good point, Hubert, about the fear, you know, just people thinking that they're going to be invisible and seem not important.
Excellent. Yeah, role modeling good distant employee behavior is one way to motivate folks.
And And maybe coming back to the point of my side, I see, for instance, in the public administration, that the leaders, they don't care that the IT infrastructure doesn't really reach into the home of the people. They say, okay, this is the IT department, this sits somewhere, and they have their own plans, yeah? And they are more like elaborating their own video conferencing tools now, yeah, which will be released in 2 months for more than 12 people, yeah? But they don't really engage and care, and they don't go the extra mile, because sometimes somehow maybe you need to invest some individual sources for that people can work and feel connected with the whole team. Some can do it privately and some don't, yeah, and those who are not doing it, I mean, it's also interesting, but the leader has to care for this balance also, yeah. Because as I can see, it is not everybody has the same equipment or let's say training or attitude towards digital work. Not, I don't mean our experts group here. Yeah, I mean really the workforce on the floors of administration or wherever in the companies.
Right, Hubert. I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, you know, the Mittelstand companies in places like Germany and manufacturing industry, yeah, that is very traditional in terms of being able to see how work gets done. And now, if that some of that work has shifted to being offsite, they're not equipped. Those leaders are not equipped to sort of manage and motivate a workforce because they used to just see their output. So back to this issue of activities versus outcomes, and interested in other viewpoints and other industries and geographies of what you all are seeing, emerging trends in that. People are being shy. I'm sure you've got perspectives.
There's one other thing in addition to remote and distance that is a struggle, and would, you know, maybe people can chime in on this horizon, and it is figuring out what these measurements need to be anyway. So a simple example, you know, with the activities is satisfaction might not show up where you're measuring it, you know, brand loyalty and those kind of things. And it seems like it is a struggle for everywhere to really figure out, you know, what really is valuable and how to measure it and track all that. So we might just be looking at the wrong things potentially. And then that has been exacerbated or illuminated or something like that with the change to almost all remote work.
Are you all observing what Gina just said?
Maybe I can also just add into what Gina just said. And I think that expectations are shifting as well. So, I mean, even as a customer, mm-hmm, my expectations are different. We have a really great online delivery service here from one of our big supermarket chains. I literally can place an order now and within an hour it's on my doorstep. But there are elements of that service that I don't like, but I'm willing to tolerate it at the moment because it's so convenient, it's so efficient, and I understand that the circumstances are challenging. So I think I loved what you said there, Gina, about measurement. You know, there's a lot that's shifted in terms of measurement standards and expectations for all of us. I guess a lot of benchmarks are going right out the window.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, I mean, and it's too early to tell. I haven't seen that many empirical studies on that stuff because we're still experiencing it. But I agree, Janet, that in the coming months, we'll begin to see some data on how things have shifted, how measurement of work has shifted, how performance evaluation systems and approaches and cycles are shifting. And maybe if I may, it's for the better because some of the ways that we were measuring stuff was going back to a more of industrial era and a lot of legacies that were still sort of coming through, except for some newer industries that shed all that. Many, many companies are still struggling with those kind of burdens.
Leslie's popped up in the chat with a good point around the leader mindset. So we talked about the point that Hubert made around not, you know, maybe they're not slacking, they just aren't equipped. And so Wesley's added on with that around, you know, examining your mindsets to be able to offer flexibility as well as that. So that's a question. What is everyone seeing with leaders you're working with around flexing on maybe people aren't fully equipped, they didn't want to do this, maybe we need to be measuring something different. I can start. We have a mix. We have some, we don't have any middle. We have some that have just excelled, and we have some that are literally freaking out because they haven't realized, they just haven't realized how to think differently to deliver productivity or to connect differently. So I haven't seen a lot of middle ground. It's been extremes has been my observation.
I've got a client, they're older, it's a privately held company, they're in their 70s, their senior leadership team, and they're having a very difficult time adjusting to the remote work, even after 6 months. They still are wanting to have them back at the office sooner than later and still measuring them in the ways that they used to. Go ahead, Susanna.
I was just going to say, they're going through the shift themselves, right? So like any kind of change management, you've got people who are ahead of the curve, behind the curve. Exactly. And we'll never hit the curve. And so I think there are managers who are surprising themselves, because we certainly had managers who originally said there's no way that these people can work from home. And then within a few weeks, proven differently and are now embracing the whole idea that people can work from home. So, but I think that We have to keep in mind that we're in the middle of a pandemic, and people's viewpoints is pandemic view.
Right.
And so how much of it will stick once the pandemic is, I hesitate to say over or at least moderated, is the question that I don't think any of us can answer at this point, because people's reactions are not normal reactions at this point. So it is interesting to watch. Within my own organization, we just did a survey to employees to say, do you want to come back? If you had your choice, once you're allowed to come back, because you're not allowed right now, once you're allowed, do you want to come back to the office? And the majority of people are saying 1 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. There is a small percentage, about 5%, they're saying, I want to come back full time.
Right.
And there is an equally small percentage that say, I want to stay home.
Right.
But the majority of people are saying, I want to come back. Yeah. I want to come back when my team is back so that I can have those interactions. And ironically, and this is to the point earlier about some of these tech companies going, we're full on, we're all home. It's the younger population that wants to actually come back.
Right.
And I think that is contrary. If you were going to lay bets back in January, I think most of us would have laid bets that our younger ones were the ones that would want to work from home, and it was the older ones that wanted to come into the office. And what we're seeing is a little bit of a reverse of that. And it's the reasons are they are missing, and you touched on this, they're missing the networks. They're missing the interaction with senior leaders. They're missing the opportunity to hear about things that they wouldn't naturally hear in their little world. And when your world is the size of a screen, and the only people that you're talking to are those that are screening through, you don't get that broader perspective, and you do not make the connections that are going to serve you for the rest of your career. And so they're realizing that this isn't what they signed up for.
That's a wonderful point. And I think, because there's too much to gain for them. They're at the stages where they need to network to grow and career pathing and all that. Those were in the later points in their career, they're less concerned about that. And I think the other thing that's happening is they're more susceptible. So the older workforce, if you may, is more susceptible to getting the disease if everyone returns back to the workforce. So even if they may want to go back to how it was, they don't want to obvious risks. Yeah. And what's interesting, as you said, Susanna, in the midst of this stuff, my view is that for 5 or 6 months, we can do something and then we can go back to things. But the longer we are in this period, and my coaching training tells me, if you stay in this 9 months or longer, the chances of some of these practices becoming permanent are perhaps higher. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we might be looking at things, you know, 12 to 18 months before the full return to work. So who knows? We'll have to see.
I was literally this morning on a presentation from, it was McKinsey, talking about return to work or return to office. We've got to be careful not to call it return to work, right. Return to office. And one of the things that they were saying is organizations, and I came from an organization 10 years ago that was very virtual. Right. But organizations that moved to very virtual after a few years came back because what we're working with right now are all the networks and all the dynamics that we took home with us.
Right.
And over time, those things will start to diminish and we haven't replaced them with suitable replacements. Absolutely. And so your talent and everything else then becomes stagnant and only what's in front of you. And so many of those organizations roll back to something that is more of a hybrid. And so I think to your point, we will come up with a new norm. It won't be the one that we left, but we've got to be careful that we're actually replacing it with something to mitigate what we are losing right now.
Right.
We're gaining some things, but we're also losing. And what are we doing to regain those things in a different way so that we don't lose our talent?
Absolutely. You got to solve for culture, solve for engagement. And, you know, like what Yahoo did a few years ago to bring a remote, largely remote workforce back because they were figuring it was really impacting their ability to retain talent and to have them be engaged.
There is a little nuance in there, and I'd be curious if other people found it as well. So I've talked to 6 or 7 companies that my own included that mirror exactly what Wesley just said. People tend to want to come back 1 to 3 days a week. They don't want to go back overwhelmingly. They don't want to go back to what happened before. However, the leader view is different than the other people's view. The leader view is they would like to be out of the office 1 day a week as opposed to in the office 1 day a week. And so that number has moved. And this is data from a PwC survey, but it's still there. There's still a gap, and that's where it's falling is between the leaders and the, at least in some of this data. So just something else for people to talk mm-hmm. about and look into as far as how things are going forward.
What was interesting, and I'll shut up after this last point. One of our most senior leaders actually said he misses being in the office because that's how he heard about what was going on below.
Right.
And so when you're a senior leader and all you see and the only people you talk to are other fellow senior leaders, you lose touch with what's going on at the ground.
Right.
And so this was someone who you got into an elevator with, he was chatting you up. You came out of a meeting, he was chatting to the person that he was walking, like, and it was his way to stay in touch with what was actually happening in the organization. He right. is missing that.
Yeah.
And he can't, you know, you can't Zoom by in a chat. You can't, like, you don't get that. So I think that may be a little bit of what you're also seeing from your senior leaders is that they're missing that dynamic, same way as our younger folks, they're missing it from the other side.
Yeah, I mean, just to reinforce that, I mean, I think we're seeing, you know, that a lot of our clients, while they've been technologically able to shift working from home, you know, the biggest gap, you know, is the activities that, you know, that they cite that typically go on outside of the meetings. You know, it's the corridor conversations where a lot of organizations actually make decisions as opposed to, you know, sitting in a conference room or sitting in a Zoom, you know, chat. And I think that's the biggest challenge of, you know, how do you replicate that kind of activity, you know, with a virtual, you know, workforce. But, you know, to sort of reinforce the survey, you know, that I think Susanna had mentioned, our firm did a survey of some 3,200 people across a variety of industries that represent our clients. You know, and we found, you know, that the majority of people, you know, want to come back to the physical place part-time. You know, what was interesting about the survey was that only 12% of those surveyed didn't want to come back, you know, to some form of physical. But then we asked them to prioritize what were the activities that they wanted to come back to the physical office for. And the top four were, you know, social interaction, collaboration, mentoring, and those types of activities. You know, nobody mentioned focus work. You know, and so, you know, we're seeing a lot more of a hybrid type of a model sort of being developed that really changes the nature of what you know, of how you sort of categorize work, but also what the implications are for a physical workplace. You know, that why should you have, for instance, a 500,000 square foot corporate headquarters that does everything for everybody, as opposed to creating a conference center and allowing people to do individual work in a variety of places that aren't necessarily, you know, in the physical workplace.
That's a great point, Arnold. And I think, you know, the deep individual work will probably, more of that will take place at your place of choice, right, because the distractions in the workplace didn't really allow for that as well. And is the interaction and social and the human aspects that we, that people are missing, that you all are mentioning, people will yearn to go back for that when it's safe.
The other challenge that we're finding with young people, in addition to what was mentioned, you know, about the mentoring, you know, is that many young people don't have the physical place to be able to successfully work from home, like those of us who have been in the workforce for a number of years, you know, and I'm assuming just by looking at everybody's background, most of us have separate rooms where we do work. So for us, the shift wasn't that, you know, that difficult to a certain degree, where some 25-year-old who's sharing a highly expensive apartment in, you know, downtown Los Angeles, you know, with two other roommates, you know, it becomes very difficult to work from home. So I think that's one of the things that we're finding why young people want to come back to the workplace as well, is because they don't have the physical, you know, attributes of being able to work comfortably, you know, in a separate room.
My favorite story around that is we had an employee who every morning with their roommate would figure out who got to do their Zoom call from the bathroom, because the bathroom was the quietest place in their apartment and they could shut the door and they would just put a virtual background up, and the person that had the most important call got the bathroom.
I mean, it's people like my daughter who's saying after 6 months, "Mom and Dad, I love you, but I got to go back. I can't do this permanently." So, you know, it's all of those dynamics that are at play. Gina, we're almost at time. Should we start to wrap things up?
We should. Does anyone have any other thoughts or anything you'd like to pursue? So around this topic or other topics, because as I mentioned, this is one opportunity to engage, and we appreciate all of you that have joined and chimed in the conversation. So what are your parting thoughts on this, and then also other conversations we might have going forward that would be of use to you?
For me, I have one question which concerns me in my work with clients daily somehow. Yeah, is as organization design consultant, for instance, now I'm working with some clients of redesigning management communication or leadership teams, whatever. Yeah. So my question, what really concerns me, is what's the aim of the consulting or the designing? Yeah. Is it something where we say, okay, are we going to design for this remote, virtual work and life, or for the old, let's say the old normal, or something in between, or a hybrid? So what's the, let's say, design state? Yeah. What we need to keep into mind as a consultant also, maybe when we work with clients, prepare for all different options and diversify thoughts and design prototypes, or narrowing it to some things. So this is something what I'm always thinking about, yeah, because managers are people, they want to have a rather secure, let's say, focus, yeah, to look at in the future.
Yeah, I mean, Hubert, you're making a good point. I think this is great news for us in this business, because I, you know, as you all guessed it on this phone call, people don't know. We're in the midst of it. There's so many different trends where it falls. I think org design consultants are in a key place to advise clients on what they're trying to achieve, what those options may look like. And I think it's a bonanza for us, in my humble opinion.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Robert, for that. And any other comments, again, on this topic or topics you'd like to see going forward?
I would just add, I'd be interested in maybe as a future topic of what this is doing to org structures. So as we look at how the work has changed and how we get work done differently? Do we actually have, you know, different structures in place or ways of working to better solve for some of the challenges that it presents?
I share that as well. I wonder about spans specifically.
I was just going to go there. Yeah. Does it change spans? I'm going to lean to yes.
Yeah, that's been my inclination as well. So thanks for bringing that up. I have that as an area of interest also. Kathy, were you going to say something? Sorry.
Yeah, I was just, excuse me, I was just going to say that I've been very happy to listen from people's experiences within companies as a consultant. What's been interesting to me, the trends I'm seeing are the issues around measuring qualitative versus quantitative work. And how do we capture qualitative work, but also, you know, when you were talking, Susanna, about structure, and that's what came to mind. What I'm hearing in the conversation is the white space. How do we get at the white space, what we used to call the white space in the organization? How do we, the value of that, the incredible value of that, how do we capture it? How do we promote it? How do we measure it? How do we encourage it in a virtual kind of situation, and that of course is what is driving people to mm-hmm. want to go back and get together and come back to work. But what about those people who can't do that, and how can we measure that, work that, encourage that in a very, very different way? So I would like that to be considered at some point as well in a further conversation.
Okay, great. That's cultural elements, right? Yeah, the white space is the culture, the values, the things.
Yeah, the culture, the relationships, the connections. How do you make decisions? How do you connect? Exactly, the networks.
Yeah, I was going to say that. How do you know your talent beyond those that report directly to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? I haven't heard from. Okay, if not, Tanya, do we have any other logistic items? Otherwise, we thank you very much to Harris for joining us and moderating the conversation. Thank you to all of you for joining, and we certainly hope we'll see you at future events, and especially those of you who are making accommodations for the time zone. I know it's an evening for some of you, so thanks so much. Anything else, Tanya?
Yeah, that was it. I was scribbling notes of what y'all were saying, and then we'll put a question out there to see who might like to step into Harris's role for a future call and be the person that kind of poses the few questions and acts as host for the pop-up for the day. So thank you all very much for your time and your energy and your genius that you all are so generous in sharing as you talk through these topics.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
All right, thank you all. Thank you.